We can begin. All right. So this is another class on Zen Living, the book that I wrote. It's an idiot's guide. It is out of physical print. We don't know why, but you can still get a digital copy of it. And we're talking about chapter 19. Daily opportunities for Zen practice. And there are going to be, after this, three more classes on this book. And on the website, you can see how it's broken down, what we're going to talk about. I think next week is Zen and mental health. And the one after that, forget the last one. There's a whole chapter of FAQs in this book, and we can't possibly talk about them all in one night. So I figured that night we will just like take a vote and decide, which ones we should prioritize and talk about. And then we will be going on to this book by Shinryu Suzuki, Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness. And we did. I have a spreadsheet with that tracks all the classes and all my talks. And we did do this 6 years ago, but I figured there's plenty of folks who have not done it. And I would imagine the folks who did do it are like, I don't remember it. So this is so Shinryu Suzuki, so well-loved 20th century Zen master, Japanese guy, but he taught in the US. And these are his talks on the Sandokai, or the harmony of difference and sameness, which is something we chant every Sunday. So it's a really classic Zen text. It's like a long poem. It really is a poem. It's got a lot of imagery in it and stuff. So by doing this, we're studying that text, but it's also like Shinryu Suzuki is just so down to earth and profound at the same time. So that should be fun. All right. So tonight we're talking about being a Buddhist surrounded by mostly non-Buddhists. So most of us here are convert Buddhists. Buddhists in a culture where there's very few Buddhists. We didn't grow up Buddhist. We decided to become Buddhist at some point. Some of us might have grown up in a Buddhist family, but a lot of times in that case, the way that we engage with practice anyway can be very different from how somebody was raised in Buddhism. They might have been raised in it, but related to it very differently. I mean, if you just think about how many people who are kind of nominally technically Christian, but that doesn't necessarily, it can mean many different things. For many people, that just means, you celebrate a couple holidays, or, you kind of hope there's a heaven when you die, or, so anyway, that's many, many Buddhists in the world. I mean, there's that spectrum all the way from people who are really into the practice to just kind of nominally culturally Buddhist. So just because you grew up in a Buddhist family doesn't necessarily mean your family totally gets what you're doing either. And most of the people that I'm seeing right now, I would say are, relatively like, I don't want to say devout, but like, or, we're kind of into Buddhism more so than like, you think about a Christian who would go to Bible study on Wednesday nights, and go to church on Sundays. And, I don't really know too many Christians like that, honestly. People who really, and if you think about it, do you aim to meditate in 20 to 30 minutes several times a week? How many people do you know set aside that much time for prayer? So like we're kind of on the we're on the devout side, or the really involved side, many of us. And we live in a culture that generally assumes we're Christian or secular for the most part. And then often there's also stereotypes about Buddhists. People know very little, but they'll still assume that like you're supposed to be like a calm, like the Dalai Lama or something, or that, you know, because you have some idea of monks who don't, you know, have any fun, like that means as a Buddhist, you're not supposed to do this and you're not supposed to do that. Also our culture, if they do find out we're Buddhist, like, oh, and then they assume that we worship Buddha as a god, because most people really can't get their minds around a religion that isn't based on theism. Even though we have many kind of godlike figures, but it's not really based on that belief in something, supernatural beings. And then our families, they may be religious or not, and there are challenges both ways. You know, if your family is very identified with a particular religion and you're not choosing that, that can be very, very fraught and difficult. But then if you have a family like mine, which is basically secular, and religions are for, well, not very nice things you might say about people, and they don't want their daughter to be one of those, you know, so there's challenges there too, if your family really does not relate to wanting to be involved in anything like a religion. So then there can be a feeling of a kind of compromised intimacy, because there's a very important part of our life we can't talk about, or we don't want to talk about, or if we do, it's they people don't get it. Then there's also conflicts with family and significant others in terms of how we spend our time and resources. So you may be single and not live with anyone, and you get to kind of do whatever you want, but many of us have various relationships and obligations. And any time we're choosing to do something like we're doing tonight, right? That's time we're not, you know, at home, or we're not with family, or we're not doing these other things, or and so there can be conflict about that. There can be inexplicable negative reactions from people. Sometimes it falls into the categories I'm talking about, and sometimes people just really don't like the idea. I even forgot about it, but apparently, like, I was reading the book today, and I had a friend who just stopped being friends with me when I got really into Buddhism, because she just, I don't know, she just couldn't handle it. She thought it was really weird. Yeah, so I'm going to have us all break into small groups for a little bit to answer a couple questions, particularly the sharing, if you're willing, and nobody has to share, you can pass if you want, but how much do your friends and family know about your Buddhist practice? Just kind of curious to share, like, you know, they know, they don't care. Cool. I mean, they're supportive. Or maybe there's part of your family that you can't tell, or you haven't, or maybe you're kind of in the closet at work, or, you know, it just be interesting to share that. And then the second question, have you encountered any points of tension in your relationships because of your practice? Those could be many things, like I was talking about. But as we're doing this, I want to keep in mind the magical middle way. So the middle way being the path that is the Buddhist path. And in any given circumstance, this is about trying not to get trapped in dualism. So what we generally notice is there seems to be two extremes, two kind of mutually exclusive options, neither of which seem great. So in this case, so one extreme when it comes to relationships and our Buddhist practice. One extreme would be, it doesn't matter what other people think. You can speak and act in whatever way you want. You can either let it all hang out and screw everybody's reactions, or you don't have to share it at all. You don't care what other people think. The point kind of being, you shouldn't care what other people think, or it's none of their business, or something like that. So that's kind of on the one side. And on the other side, of course, would be, it matters very much what the people in your life think. And in the interest of harmonious relationships, you should aim to manifest your Buddhism, in whatever that means to you, only in ways that don't upset anyone. So neither of these are ideal. If you take that first extreme and, it's like, doesn't, nobody's business, I don't care what anybody thinks, you're kind of acting like relationships don't matter unless they're entirely on your own terms, as if your choices don't affect anyone in your life. And maybe they don't, but you'd have to be pretty like independent for that to be the case. Or acting as if the understanding and willingness of the people in your life is of little value to you. It's not worth any compromise. I know I kind of tend to act on this end of the spectrum a little bit, is just like.
Jinri is asking if you're using your mic.
Am I, which mic? The lapel mic? Yeah. Yeah, so everybody in here can hear quite well. Okay. All right, good. Yeah, so I tend to kind of act on this end of the spectrum where a few times, bless his heart, my husband has had to remind me, like, your decisions do affect me. And it might be nice if you told me this thing was going to happen, but on the other hand, if we are very, very sensitive to what the people in our lives, and we don't want to upset them at all with our practice or inconvenience them with our practice or, make them psychologically uncomfortable or anything, then you may end up compromising your practice in ways that are saddening to you. That you're actually kind of doing without a practice or a community or activities like retreat or something like that that you really want to do, and yet you're not doing it because you don't want to upset someone. It might be a source of regret or hurt that you don't end up practicing the way you would like. And another aspect of this might be hiding or holding back an important part of yourself, and thereby undermining the true intimacy of your relationships. And this totally depends on the relationship, of course. And it's, in terms of how out there there is no shoulds, right? All of this is like a crazy balancing act. It's not like you ever just arrive at a place and like, all right, that's it. End of the negotiation, right? That's not how relationships work. But in terms of, how out there should we be, in a kind of a different setting, I've run into this as a Zen priest, right? Because there's kind of this open question about, do I walk around every day, all day, dressed as a Zen priest? And I have at times. And then there's even the extreme of like, should I have my head completely shaved? And I have done that for a number of years as well. So my head shaved and, wearing a Japanese samurai thing when I go to New Seasons or whatever. And I don't know, like, I kind of stopped doing it, not so much because I wanted to blend in, but because nobody seemed to notice. I mean, it'd be different. Like, what's interesting is if I did go into an Asian restaurant, they would notice. They would really notice, and they would seem kind of appreciative of my presence. But nobody else knows what it means. And I guess we're too just like, I don't know. I don't know what you're wearing, man. But, you know, like, I'm not really going to ask. We're kind of a, in that sense, people just kind of stand off. They don't really ask any questions. So it didn't open up any conversations. So in some ways, I'm like, I'll just kind of go incognito now if I'm going to go to a restaurant or a grocery store. But that's still an open thing. You know, if you, it's almost like the matter of extremes. Because if you were wandering down the street and you saw a Theravadan monk all like swaddled up in orange robes, I mean, that really stands out. And that, you know, that does something to you. And what was it? There was also, I was in graduate school and I had an altar set up in my room. And for some reason, I can't remember why, my roommate, she brought somebody else in there. That seems weird, but there was a legitimate reason for them to be going into my room for some reason. And he was, I can't remember if he had an Asian background or what, but like he saw my altar and, you know, I mean, he reacted to my altar. So there's some ways that these forms and being visible can be kind of meaningful. So let's just leave that there and we can go into our small groups for, let's make this 15 minutes so that we have enough time. So you only have, most groups are going to have three. So everybody would. Oh my gosh. I see. Most groups will have, if you have three people, that gives you like 4 or 5 minutes to talk. But if you have, some of groups might end up with four, so you have a little bit less time. So you are, and I will, I can send this, I can broadcast this to the breakout rooms once they're formed. But one, how much do your friends and family know about your Buddhist practice? And obviously there may be people who know and people who don't and different degrees of that knowing. And have you encountered any points of tension in your relationships because of your practice? Any questions? All right, take it away. All right, so we don't need to like report back in the sense of, you know, summarizing everything that everybody said, but any kind of thoughts or questions arise out of that? Anybody who's not aware, if you're in the cloud under reactions, you can click it and then click raise hand and you get a little raise hand up and I'll see Veronica.
I was really looking forward to the little breakouts and hearing what people said. And I thought I was a little bit more alone in being surrounded by non-Buddhists in my life and in being worried about whatever or having a little bit of trouble. And so it was just really kind of soothing to the soul to hear everybody's stories. And they're actually all different, but quite similar in ways. So I just really appreciated that. It was a very valuable time. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Courtney and then Coral.
Okay.
So, that's the order I saw you guys.
Do I need to come back here?
There you go.
As far as like my relationships, I realized that I haven't been doing this long, but following, you know, attempting to follow the precepts and sort of live a Buddhist life is kind of changing how I am in the world, and it's impacting my relationships in that, like for instance, if I have like somebody that I'm, you know, the relationship is kind of based on gossip and I'm I'm just not engaging with the behaviors I used to do as much, and it creates some conflict or confusion in them, or they're just not sure what to do with me.
Why aren't they gossiping with us anymore?
That's a really big one, because I mean, I don't know about men, but I know that for women, like, sometimes that is like, you know, great fun, especially if you kind of share a community or a workplace or something, and you're just talking about people. You don't have to talk about people. Mm-hmm. And then when you start to question, like, do I really want to be doing that? And then it's like, well, not only what are you going to talk about instead, but then, yeah, it actually can feel like we're disconnected from people, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. I've described this story a few times, but when I noticed that early on in practice, and then it was very awkward for a while. It's like, I'm not a good conversationalist anymore. But then I began to realize, like, other people, we usually just keep on talking. So you don't actually have to like contribute that much. And like, I found myself interested in the person, right? I could like be listening, and then it would, you know, I didn't have to say, as a Buddhist, we don't do those bad things, you know, just like chill. And I'd just be like, how was your trip? You know, like just kind of sweetly, gently kind of change the topic. It's tricky. Coral.
Yeah, actually that, yeah, my comment is in the same vein as something I forgot to bring up when we were meeting in a group, but my friends love to complain to me. I have at least two friends that only come to me when they have things they want to vent about. They used to really bother me. And then I realized there must be something about my demeanor that is welcoming to that. I'm like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then sometimes I feel like they're like, and your advice is... And I'm like, oh, like, do I tell them what I think about this because it's something I learned at the Zen Center or something I'm reading about in a Zen book, but I know it's maybe not appropriate to come at them with this.
Right.
And I don't know how to be like, that's not real. So something I've been running into lately.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the precept, do not be mean with dharma or wealth, share understanding, give freely of self. And like, how do we share the dharma when the vast majority of the time we're with people who don't want to hear about the dharma? And that's one of the things that I recognized early on, because I don't know. I wanted to talk. I'm excited about it. Excited about what I'm learning and how it's helping my life and all of this stuff. And for the most part, it was like people didn't want to hear about it. But then sometimes people would ask a question. This depends on the person, of course, and then I would recognize, like, answer the question. And then stop. If they go like, oh, that's interesting, going to a retreat, you know, on Saturday? Oh, okay, what's that? You know, like, and okay, so what do you do all day, right? Meditate, okay. And if they don't ask anything more, don't explain like the purpose of a retreat or like, I don't know, like, yeah, you know, oh, we're doing this ceremony, the Hungry Ghost. Oh. You know, they don't want to hear anything more about it. Just a little bit at a time. Yes. Mick.
Yeah. I was gonna say that, like, particularly with my wife and my like close friends, I think when I started, it was kind of awkward to talk about, you know, to be like, well, yesterday I wasn't a Buddhist, but today I am. And I think early on, there was a lot of kind of like eye rolling and a lot of like, Yeah, just kind of like, oh, that's Mick. He's because I've always been like deeply philosophical and I get it. And I deserved all of the eye rolls. I'm not going to say I didn't. But I think that like what really started to change was when people started to see that there was a real commitment to change the way that I acted and to sort of like change the way that I went through my daily life. That was sort of like beyond the kitschy statues and the bowing and the, you know, and I think that like that real genuine conversations started to happen as a result of those types of things. And I think, I think once like people who really cared about me, people who really do care about me, once they kind of understood it better in the way that I was committing myself to it, I think it became much easier to talk about in more like practical terms. Like I don't, you know, anyways, I don't want to act like that. I don't want to do those things. It's kind of like, I guess, mine in a nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, that's something which, if you do have, I mean, it sounds like listening around the room here, there's just a wide variety of experiences. Sometimes, generally speaking, people's friends are cool and supportive and interested and all that. But I know for my family, especially as I got involved, like really involved, you know, there was pushback. But I think basically, those who are close to you are watching to see what happens. You know, is it just a stupid flame, right? And then, you know, next year you'll be something else. Or are you going to get all hard-assed about, like, morality and start to lecture people about being vegetarian and stuff like that, you know? Or, like, are you going to stop enjoying yourself with people? Are you going to suddenly stop drinking and you're going to stop partying and you're going to stop doing this and stop doing that because you want to stop gossiping? You know, like, so the question is kind of, you know, what is this going to mean to our relationship? And once you kind of like, you just chill and stick with it without like flipping out or doing anything too weird. Then they're like, that's cool. That's just something you do. And, you know, I do think people develop a respect for it over time. Jimmy.
Thank you. You shared something just before we went into the breakout rooms that was really touched me. And I talked about it in a little bit in the room I was in. And I really want to think about this some more. This is more important in my life than I realize. But close friends know that the past couple of months for me have been just turmoil. I mean, this, that, and the other happening and things to manage and on and on and on. And I think we are about to turn the corner. But I have an entirely different set of friends in my 12-step community. And throughout this tumultuous time, we could not talk to them. And finally, I realized just last week, I did not want to talk to them. People I wanted to talk to were in my Zen community, and thank God. Interesting that I would say that. Thank God that I have some friends in my Zen community, because I was just thinking the other day about what the Buddha said, that friendship in the Sangha is the most important thing. I'm not getting that right, but I think some of you know what I'm talking about. I really want to think about that some more and why I am gathering, why I'm getting that right now. But the comment you made that made me think about it was the lack of intimacy in certain friendships because I'm a Buddhist. And so I do feel that some of those friendships are starting to wear away at the edges because I'm Buddhist. And because my spiritual path is so different from theirs. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, practice is a path of change. And, you know, there's pros and cons to that. You know, if you're, you don't have a set of relationships and you change, I mean, that can be a little bit sad too. But I know that, I don't know, the way that I operate now, I think is like, there's just different kinds of friends. You know, there's going to soccer game friends, and there's accordion friends, and there's like, and sometimes I stop and I think, you know, I'm here with, you know, my family or something, and I feel really close to them. And yet, when I think about it, like, I don't talk to them about almost any of the stuff that matters to me the most. I have to get together with a Dharma friend and talk about the stuff that matters to me the most, you know, and then we can stay up until the wee hours of the morning just talking about, like, you know, the full experience of this moment, and, you know, like all kinds of stuff. And, but I guess as long as I have enough Sangha friends, right? As long as I have enough Sangha, then I can appreciate these other kinds of friends, and they don't have to meet that need. Tyler.
Yeah, hopefully my mic's been a little echoey, so I apologize if that's the case. Just, you know, when I first started, I was really, I kept it really just kind of to myself and my immediate family. And then I took a little while to take the precepts. But then when I did, I decided I'm just going to like put a post up on Facebook that I've officially become I properly became a Buddhist. I had a picture of my Wagesa, and like, I was really nervous that it was going to be like a negative or like a weird response, but it was really overarchingly positive. And people had questions that were interested. And so I slowly have started letting it into like more and more of my life. And I was, you know, doing a interview for a practicum for a counseling thing. And I just decided in one of my answers to be like, well, you know, I'm a practicing Zen Buddhist, and like, this is sort of influences what I do. And I was kind of like ready for them to be like, I don't know, man, like, don't bring that in here. But then she's like, oh, we have a practice group for people recovering that's based around Buddhist principles. And like, that might be something really interesting. And so like, it's been really positively embraced. And being able to just like have such a positive experience, just putting it out there has been surprisingly wonderful, because I was really nervous about it. And my family has been very supportive, and I think they like that I'm Buddhist mostly now, because then when I'm acting in an un-Buddhist way, they can call me out on it and be like, well, that's not a very Buddhist way for you to act. And they get great joy out of being able to do that. So that's nice. Thank you.
It is good. I mean, and that's, in some ways, that's one of the values of a public vow, right? You said you were Buddhist, so, you know, now you're swearing at that driver, you know, like, you get it where if you, you know, never stated that intention, you know, whereas that's why I feel a little weird sometimes. I don't particularly want to go bald and dressed as a priest out to lunch with my husband on Sundays and have a margarita. It just doesn't quite fit. All righty. Well, that is 9 o'clock. Thank you, everyone, for participating. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Good night.